You may or may not like Greta Thunberg, but what is undeniable is that she wasn't afraid to do something. Despite just being a young schoolgirl, she looked at the climate emergency and instead of being overwhelmed, she asked herself, "What can I do here?" And it was this specific question of responsibility that led her to start her solitary school strikes, which snowballed into a global movement. And this demonstrates a quintessential Stoic principle, which is to focus on what is within one's own power to change. And Greta's decision to act, regardless of her age or the magnitude of the issue, embodies the belief in personal agency and responsibility. This shows that a single question to ourselves can not only shape our decisions, but can also have a profound impact on the world. And performance coach Julie Gerner said that the questions you ask yourself will largely determine the answers that you get. If you ask yourself, "Why am I not successful?" you'll get answers that berate you. If you ask yourself instead, "How can I succeed here?" you'll get answers that push you forward in a motivating way. So in this episode, we will explore how Stoic questions, similar to the one that Greta asked herself, can help us confront our own challenges, big or small, and lead us to live more purposeful and impactful lives. Hello and welcome to the Growth Mindset Podcast, diving into the psychology of self-improvement with me, Sam Webster-Harris. Stay tuned after the break as we learn how to master our own destiny using the most powerful questions that have stood the test of time.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
If you've been following this season, we've been rifling through the archives of Stoic wisdom to give answers for a good life in the modern world. But answers often do come from questions. And as the season is coming towards the end, it's definitely about time to dive into some reflection, as this has been a continuous theme from both Stoicism and growth mindset of how to actually improve. I have diligently compiled the 10 most powerful questions to serve as tools for self-examination whilst encouraging a life of virtue, wisdom, and fulfillment. So let's crack into it. Question number one, am I practicing what I preach? The definition of cognitive dissonance is where our beliefs, attitudes, or behaviors conflict with each other, leading to mental disturbance, basically saying that you will have a nagging sense of unhappiness if you aren't genuine. Cato the Younger was known for his uncorruptibility and refusal of any bribe. He preferred to be good rather than to appear good. And we should do something similar. Creating consistency between our beliefs and actions fosters authenticity and builds trust. If you tell your partner that you need them to be honest, yet you regularly withhold information or avoid discussing topics, you'll erode trust. A useful further question you might want to ask yourself would be to ask, what actions do you have that you'd be ashamed of if others knew of them? A truly good character means hiding nothing. And that means that you won't be talking behind people's backs or lying, and you would be accountable for standards that you expect from others. As a parent, if you tell your kids to eat healthy, make sensible finance choices, and be on time, but you eat fast food, make impulse purchases, and are always late, you can't hold your kids accountable for not following your instructions, because they'll be following your actions. Question two, how can I simplify my life to focus on what's important? Warren Buffett is well known for his legendary advice that one should make a list of our 25 biggest priorities in life, and then cross out the bottom 20 priorities and use those 20 as a list of things that you should not be doing at all, so that you will actually work on only the 5 most important things in your life. Now, whatever strategy you use, simplifying your life is one of the most impactful things that you can do. We don't realize how much all the different commitments and possessions slow us down and block our progress. One of my favorite stories of focus is when Steve Jobs returned to Apple in 1997 They were on the brink of bankruptcy, losing $1 billion a year with a sprawling product line of dozens of different Mac models, different types of printers and scanners. And Steve went and simplified what they were doing and cut out 70% of their products, so they focused on just 5 really great things that they did well. And within a year, they were back in profit, and they went on to become the most valuable company in the world by being known for their focus on doing something really well. And if this works for Apple, then freeing ourselves of physical and mental clutter can lead to greater success as well. But we have to learn to say no to things. We must ask ourselves what takes up our time or our mental headspace or even our physical space, and list out things like activities, responsibilities, possessions, or even people that perhaps need to be cut out. Daniel Kahneman will never accept a commitment on the phone, and he says he will only confirm a meeting or obligation a day later. He found that he is just drawn to be people-pleasing, and by giving himself some distance, he can assess rationally his priorities before filling his commitments. So we have to get clarity ourselves on what are the most important things, and that leads to the next question to help you work out what actually matters. Number 3. Will this matter in 1 year or in 5 years' time? We should examine the long-term significance of our current worries, our decisions, and our actions. There's a nice saying which says, if it's not going to matter in 5 years, don't spend more than 5 minutes being upset about it. Because no, you don't need to stress about your dinner being ruined or someone cutting you up in traffic. You do need to care about whether you are a supportive person to those around you, that you show up positively and work on meaningful things. Another important element here is that mastery comes from sticking at something over a very long time. Most people can learn 80% of a skill very quickly, so if you jump about, you won't be exceptional at anything, and we can examine our dedication for many things besides work. Nat Eliason suggests we might consider even a 30-year time horizon. Is this habit something I want to do for 30 years? Is this person someone I want to see every week for 30 years? Is this how I want to spend my money for 30 years? Is this how I want my body to look or feel for the next 30 years? I personally don't want to be consuming social media and news every day for the next 30 years, but I do want to be a better writer and read a lot of great books, which are things that I'd love to get done every day. It is definitely very easy to fall into the one day trap, believing that once you make enough money or have more time or finish the project that you're working on, you'll finally be free of obligations standing between you and your ideal self. But one day never comes. We have to start creating that day now. I had a friend who had a near-death experience a few years ago where she was run over, and she had been working, successfully climbing the career ladder, but during the weeks of her recovery, she realized she didn't want to work on anything that wasn't her dream, and she quit. She's now a sports presenter working for Arsenal TV and living that dream, and the only thing that was stopping her was herself. As an adult, we have to accept that no one is going to make you do the things you wish you could be doing. You have to get up and do it yourself. And I really hope that you don't need to nearly die to realize what's important for you. If you found this question useful, I recorded an entire episode last year called 8 Questions to Build Long-Term Happiness that is definitely worth a listen. Number 4, what is within my control? It's not what happens to you, but how you react to it that matters. This season, we've spoken about the dichotomy of control a lot because it is so important. The Stoic principle teaches that peace of mind and happiness comes from focusing our efforts only on the things within our control, our thoughts, our feelings, and our actions, and then just accepting anything that lies beyond our control. And it's honestly one of the most powerful concepts in achieving happiness. You can reduce anxiety, improve your focus, and your decision-making. Like the example a few minutes ago of Daniel Kahneman, who can't control how many people ask him for his time, but he can create a decision framework that he doesn't feel bad giving himself some space to work out rationally if he should say yes or no to a commitment. It's always easy to blame our environment when there is something that we have control over. An employee can't control their manager's decisions or the financial performance of the company, but they can control their effort and their work attitude. An entrepreneur can't control the market, but they can control their reaction to failures and their persistence. So we should be regularly asking ourselves if we are dwelling on things that we cannot change and just let go of past grievances and future worries to focus on the present opportunities. Do you check the news regularly or the price of Bitcoin When you post something on social media, do you regularly check to see how many people viewed it? Or podcasters like me might be checking our analytics every hour to see our downloads, which is definitely something I don't do, because that is dwelling on stuff out of our control. It's not giving us useful information, but adds stress and does funky things to our attention and our emotions when we could just be doing the things that we can control, like working harder. So, as I said, if it won't matter in 5 years, don't spend more than 5 minutes on it today. Number five, how can I turn obstacles into opportunities? The growth mindset, of course, views obstacles as opportunities to learn, but it's more than that. Things that are easy aren't usually worth doing. A successful business, a hit record, an Olympic gold. These are not easy achievements. Neither is a happy marriage, a healthy body, or a strong circle of close friends. They all take hard work. Healthy muscles don't grow without resistance. When something becomes difficult, we should be excited. It means we are here, right now, doing the important, difficult bit of the thing worth doing. The Stoics said, "No man is more unhappy than he who never faces adversity, for he is not permitted to prove himself." J.K. Rowling didn't give up on her Harry Potter draft when her abusive marriage fell apart and she ran away from her partner to recover. She rewrote her draft with a darker, more realistic tone about life that turned Harry Potter into the hit success that it became. Ryan Holiday, of course, says that the obstacle is the way. And it's amazing how often that the path to success looks like a dead end. It's not that we should go around the obstacle, but through it. The hero of any story doesn't just wake up, have a good life until the story ends. No, they wake up and everything goes wrong for the entire book until the end, where they arrive transformed, wiser, and more capable. Edison didn't view failed experiments as failures, but as steps towards success. He famously said that "I found 2,000 ways not to make a light bulb, and I only needed to find one way to make it work." Number six, what should I do now? And I'm going to break this up into two sections, because largely the question of what to do now weighs on us when we have a hard decision. And I think there's two sub-questions that we can ask ourselves that I really encourage you to try. The first is, what would a wise person do in this situation? And the second is, what is the simplest action I can take right now to improve the situation? So firstly, using a role model of someone you think wise is a great way to shape decisions and can be a brilliant guide for you. Derek Sivers launched CD Baby and sold the company for millions, and he wrote many brilliant books. He would use many different wise people as his mentors by writing an email of all the questions he really wanted to ask of them for his current predicament. And instead of sending the email, he would then write out all of their responses in their voice for himself, just giving himself the perspective of different ways of thinking. And now that we're in the era of AI, you could even use ChatGPT. Whether you need a YouTube coach or a therapist's opinion, how about Warren Buffett's analysis of a given stock? You can ask GPT to tell you what a wise person would say for you in this situation. Why not? And then the other question you should ask yourself is, what is the simplest action I can take right now? And this encourages progress. Looking at large problems can be overwhelming, but if we break them down into small actions, it can be manageable, it can reduce anxiety, and picking one small thing to do creates momentum. Instead of freezing, we are acting. Also, it can be very easy to overcomplicate things when maybe a simple solution would do. When researchers were developing a polio vaccine, they investigated several crazy novel techniques to create a viable solution. Yet, Jonas Salk took a simpler approach and he tried using just killed strains of the polio virus, and they worked. The relatively simpler method led to the polio vaccine, which eradicated polio across most of the world, which I think is insane. But for yourself, you can look at your own life, and whether you want to get fit or change career or increase your savings, there's no need to put off action until you can do a perfect job of it. Just do something that creates progress and then keep building on that progress. We'll be back in a moment to continue the discussion after the break. Number seven, what fears are holding me back? We suffer more from imagination than from reality. Unpleasant emotions use our time and energy, and they warp our ability to interpret the world. We have a limited amount of cognitive resources, and if those are focused on negativity, we actively limit ourselves from our potential. If an entrepreneur focused only on their risks, they'd never have time to be acting on any of their potential. If a parent was too afraid to let their kid go to school because maybe they'd be unpopular and they kept them home, the kid will reach adulthood with no social skills and they will be unpopular. It's crazy, but we manifest the fears that we focus on. It's the same in relationships, success, health. You must understand that fears are not just unpleasant emotions, but also destructive. And don't just look at the fears that hold you back. Ask yourself, what am I missing by choosing to worry or be afraid? Number 8, how am I contributing to my own dissatisfaction? If you listened to the last episode on the 4 cornerstones of ownership, we analyzed the ways that we cause our own disappointment by creating unrealistic expectations on ourselves and the world. If we hold an identity of being a runner or a painter, but we don't actually do those things anymore, we are disappointed every day when we fail at being who we think we are. If we plan for future success that involves work we don't want to do, we disappoint ourselves. A desire is a contract with yourself to be unhappy until you get the thing. So if you desire a black belt in karate, if you don't also have the desire to train every day for years, you're just going to be unhappy. Furthermore, we can look at blame. If we blame the world or our partner or our parents for our problems, we are escaping blame for ourselves. We feel that we escape blame and that's maybe nice, but actually we lose the ability to do anything about the problem. And when you give away control of your life, you're dissatisfied. And then there's also gratitude. If you forget to be grateful for what you have and you keep seeking more objects, more success, more love, then you become dissatisfied with what you have. So lose those false identities, toxic desires, and unhelpful beliefs. They don't serve you, and instead, ask what you can be grateful for today that you do have. Number 9, to be or to do. This question is all about appearance versus action. Would you rather be known as the world's greatest lover whilst being terrible in bed? Or would you rather be known as the world's worst lover and yet be an absolute firework? This hypothetical situation actually does have some reality. Often success and fame or recognition are not the same thing. John Boyd used to mentor people who are joining the Pentagon, and he said you can go down 2 paths in life. There's a person who wants to look important, that wants to achieve high rank, that wants to be in the newspapers or on TV, and then there's a person who wants to just quietly get things done. And I think that sadly, this is an element that is really overlooked in society, because of course we see the people who look like a success, and we don't see the people who are actually just doing useful work and not talking about it. The people I look up to has radically changed in the last 10 years. I personally would hate to be a famous actor with no privacy, or to be Elon Musk who has no work-life balance whatsoever. I really want to make a positive difference and work hard, but with some free time for myself to do things like reading, surfing, seeing friends, and I look up to people with a measured amount of private success who can work on impactful things that they enjoy whilst maybe living near a beach with a happy family. That for me is doing success without appearing to be a success. Number 10, are you doing your job? There's a concept that in every single moment we have a job to do, big or small, and it's your responsibility to know what your job is, whether in an organization, of course, but also in life. You should ask if you are doing your job. It's so easy to focus on everyone else's job rather than our own, maybe blaming our partner for not being good enough instead of working out how we can be better, blaming our colleague for a mistake instead of helping to fix it. The Stoics made a point of always asking what their duties were to others, which further emphasizes the importance of just contributing to the common good rather than finding reasons to complain about other people. The parable of the Good Samaritan, I think, reminds us that our job is not to judge others, it's just to be a kind and good person without holding resentment. And there you have it. Those were the 10 most powerful questions to really reflect on yourself and become more Stoic. And of course, I couldn't resist a final bonus question that rounds everything up that we've talked about and sets us up for a good life. And that is, what would it mean to live a good life today? Any journey is made up of individual steps. A big goal needs to be broken down into manageable chunks. To design a good life, you need to design, firstly, a good day. We must know what we enjoy in our day and align that with what we would enjoy to achieve in our life, whilst also taking into account our strengths and interests. And then we can pursue working on something that we're good at and makes money and is useful. As I've just said, my concept of success has changed this decade when I've actually looked at what I enjoy rather than what sounds cool to appear versus to do. And I've accepted that I'm actually much happier doing things like research, becoming a better writer, spending time outdoors, experiencing my body, and not having endless meetings and stress. And that really influenced my decisions for how I design my day and the bigger projects I take on. And hopefully for you, by reflecting on all the answers for the questions in this list, it'll provide much more clarity for then answering this last final question, as ultimately it is the most important question here for you to answer. And if you want to be reminded of them, you'll find them in the show notes and what your ideal life goals look like. And when you ask yourself if the day that you live today is something you could live for 30 years, I wonder what that answer would be. And I think it helps you understand what you need to change. And of course, don't worry about getting it perfect straight away or be held back by fear. Decide the first small change that you can make right now to push you in the right direction and go do it. Huge achievements are the sum of many small actions. So I will leave you now to get cracking. If you enjoyed the episode, please share it with a friend or hit us up with a rating or comment in Spotify, YouTube, or Apple. It really does make a big difference. So thank you for everyone that have been sending me comments. Very much appreciated. And I'd love to know what small thing you think you can change today to help improve your life. And after all, you know, I like to end by asking us to remember that life is to be enjoyed without putting off our happiness behind future goals or desires. So be kind to yourself today, and whilst you're at it, be kind to someone else too.